Yeah. Hi, I'm Allie Portee, fashion and lifestyle journalist and editor of Zayla magazine. I've always been interested in biographies and in the stories of people's lives, basically listening to what stirs their souls. Welcome to the Soulful Side of Life, where I let you in on some of my conversations with inspiring people from around the world in fashion, faith, entertainment, music, and entrepreneurship. These are conversations that stir the soul about people's journeys, about the ups and downs of life, and how they have overcome certain situations. I hope that these episodes will inspire your life in some way, so enjoy over a cup of something hot or on your drive to work. This is The Soulful Side of Life and can be found on Spotify Podcasts or Apple Podcasts. Eugenia Kuzmina is a Russian-American born during the Soviet era and all its hardships, who was discovered as a model on the streets of Moscow, and from that moment, her life changed. Her life has ebbed and it flows from the world of fashion, where she has walked for luxury brands and worked with the most notable of fashion designers, from Alexander McQueen, Terry Mugler, Victor and Rolf, Karl Lagerfeld, Albert Elbaz, and Vivienne Westwood, just to name a few, to now being an actress and a comedian. In this episode, we touch on her dad, a famous and respectable nuclear scientist who was the first responder to the Chernobyl disaster of 1986, to the challenges she faced and that models in the fashion industry face, how she landed in LA, why acting is her calling, and how comedy soothes her. She founded Models of Comedy, and she does shows between LA and New York with the likes of Tiffany Haddish and other models and actors. But I must say, I've known Eugenia for almost 2 years now, and I've seen her in quite a few situations, and I can attest that she's a genuine soul, not trying to use people to get ahead, something that's a norm in the fashion and entertainment worlds. She's consistent, kind, giving, sometimes too giving, and she doesn't look for anything in return, also another rarity in this business. She's smart as a whip, she's a discerner of people, as well as able to see people suffering. Quite simply, Eugenia is good-hearted, and I'm blessed to know her. We all need a Eugenia Kuzmina in our lives. So thank you for joining the podcast.
Yay, I'm so excited to be here, Allie.
Yeah, and you have such a fascinating story. And what I wanted to focus the conversation is on, how does someone go from Soviet Russia to modeling, then to comedy and acting? So can you just talk a little bit about your story of growing up in Russia? You were born before the wall fell, right?
Yeah. So I was born in the 80s, and the wall fell in like 91. So, you know, I was like 7 years old, I think, or something like that. And yeah, I mean, you know, we grew up in a very, I think everybody's born for a reason in a place they're born in. And I was born in a very, very repressed society, where there's only four channels and the history books are propaganda, and you're taught to be a worker. You know, basically we're not taught to dream. And I kind of, I don't know, I realized that. Like, I was such a rebel. And from the early age, my teachers, they told my mom that I'm like uncontrollable, because I would always question things. You know, I would always say, but why? Like, why do I have to color inside the lines? And like, why do I have to wear the strict uniform? And why? Like, what does it make? It doesn't make sense. And the teachers were to the point where they're like, okay, she should be homeschooled. She's like too questionable. But I think because my dad was a scientist, like, I just was born with this curious mind to know more about society and how it works. And you know, I didn't want to fit in. I didn't want to be like everybody else and listen to, like, everybody in my class wanted to be a lawyer. But I was like, okay, I want to travel. I was, you know, dreaming of being like a airlines tour. I was dreaming about being a rocket scientist first, but they told me, no, you're a woman, so come down. You basically can't do it because, as well, in Russia, a lot of times, and I think my mom's generation, there were more homemakers, and because they're food lines and you just don't have time to have two careers, it was quite rare, I think. Females mostly were housewives a lot of times. Of course, there are exceptions, but I think it was that type of society. So, I was, I think, a difficult child from perspective of my mom for sure. I always knew that I'm going to travel. I didn't know how, but I believe, really, really strongly believe in manifestation. I so much believe into that. Like, I feel I really manifested everything that happened in my life, good and bad as well. I think it's important to take responsibility.
Did you know anything about American culture when you were growing up in the Soviet Union or nothing at all?
So it was forbidden to the point where some people who would listen to Beatles and some people, my dad, like there was KGB after them. So they had to check what they're bringing back. And, there was a huge stigma about the West and the Beatles and all these kind of things. But it started leaking in, little by little. People were arrested. I think one of the poets that my dad knew, his name is Yevtushenko, very famous poet. And I grew up around artists because, it is a belief to say that scientists are very, organized and like they believe in science, but it's not true. My dad was extremely creative and we always grew up around actors and writers. So one writer was arrested and sent to jail in Siberia. That's, how afraid everybody was. And I was beaten by ru with rulers because I questioned history books. And I saw the change that it was changing the society, but of course, for my teachers who grew up believing in the propaganda, they just couldn't change in a second and see that the history that they taught and they lived and what they believed is not true anymore. So it was quite a change, and I got lucky, it's not like a it's not a skill, modeling in a way, and I didn't really knew that it's a job at all because we didn't have those type of jobs, and people who are on TV are usually kids of some, people who are connected to the government. It was very much like in the family, so you can never dream of any kind of creative career or whatever, so to say. But I got lucky because I kind of, they found that my face was a little bit European, and the clients, when they came in, they needed to advertise all the products like Coca-Cola and L'Oreal. So I was hired as a teenager, and preferred that because I was making more money than my dad at the time when I
And
was
you were
13.
discovered on the street, right? Somebody
I
found
was, yeah. So there was a scout that, like, a couple times actually, I was discovered on the street a couple times. But then there was one time when they said, oh, they're doing an audition for this huge designer. Slava Zaitsev was like the one designer in Russia that existed at the time. And I don't know, my mom was like, you should go because you're such a shy and quirky person. So I decided to go just for self-esteem. And he was an amazing designer, and he had all these beautiful models who were like 5'11". And for some reason he got a liking in me and, started doing covers with me and really believed. And he was incredibly inspirational, very positive, creative person to live in a like such a repressed regime and to be a designer. I think he really inspired me. He passed away last year. I was trying to get his dress to come to Cannes, kind of wear in his retrospective, and respect. But it's a little bit of a mess in the haute couture house in Russia right now, so they can ship it in time. But he was a huge inspiration to me, just, that you can do anything that's unimaginable as long as you have imagination and hope. He really taught me how to dream. And then when I got scouted to go to Paris, that was on the street by another scout, my parents, everybody was like, no, that doesn't exist. You're going to Paris, like it's impossible. And they're going to sell you to dance on tables. But I somehow convinced my parents to go. And I was lucky enough to have an amazing agent, Natalie Cross Cottons, who runs women In Paris now. She's a CEO. She is a great producer, really big person in Paris, and almost like my mom. Like every time I come to Paris, I do a homage to her because, I developed anorexia and she saved me from that. And she saved me from all the trouble, where girls were collected to go to nightclubs and sell to promoters. I avoided that because of her, because she really taught me that it is a job and you have to pay taxes. And I was motivated because I lost my dad at 15, so I was motivated, of course, to make money. But she also was a protective woman in the business that I experienced much later. Wasn't as light as I thought, as naive as I was. So I have to be really thankful to her and another agent, Luis Matos, who is the vice president of IMG. Now, created everybody's career from Giselle to Gigi and Bella, and like he basically made, changed lives, and is an amazing person. And I really do homage to those agents, because without them, I would have never had any career, I would think, because I was very shy and kind of not a person who would be very ambitious and mostly hiding in corners.
Yeah, you've definitely changed. I've never seen that shy side of you. So when you were in Paris, you walked for quite a few well-known brands like Alexander McQueen, and did you do Chanel, some things for Chanel? Like, can you talk
I
a little
did,
bit about
yeah. I worked for Chanel. I didn't have a good experience, unfortunately, with them because they fired me for talking too much.
that?
I was supposed to do the show, and I was also their fit model. And then Carl said that I just talked too much. So I, that was something that I think brought me to acting and kind of looking back onto mental health, so to say. I lost my voice after that. I was so ashamed of speaking up that I kind of started. I became almost an actor. Whatever anybody wanted to project onto me, I would show up and be whatever they wanted me to be, sort of thing. So it's, but I have to say I was super, super lucky because of my agents. I got to do really big campaigns like L'Oreal, billboards, and a lot of different like Dior, for glasses, Chanel for beauty, the cream. And Hermès campaign I did with them as well, was very lucky to work with Alexander McQueen, who is just incredibly down to earth and kind of a punk. He's definitely didn't fit in, so I think we got along on that. And of course, Yves Saint Laurent, who I would never forget. I owe him my beginnings for sure. And he was just such a creative. It's so rare now to see designers who are not just driven by marketing. I always appreciate when we went to Couture Week, just the embroidery or how much people do as an artistry rather than just like a quick turnaround of fast fashion.
Yeah, for sure. And like, how would you describe being a model to people who have no idea what that's like? Like, people probably think it's this glamorous world, and some parts of it is, but what is a day-to-day like when you were living in Paris?
Well, a lot of times at my time, now I think it changed the business a lot because of the influencers and kids of celebrities who do it not specifically as a career, like, salary, more as a way to be famous. I think at our time, they were scouting all these girls from Brazil and from third world countries like Russia. And those scouts, they would bring these girls who would do anything, which was also my case. I would do anything to get out. And, it was. We sign the contract, they give you an advance. You come from absolute poverty. You are not sure you can pay back, but they give you a trial maybe of like 3 to 6 months, depending on the model. And they give you an advance. They put you in a tiny little apartment with like six bunk beds that you share with other teenagers who, and teenagers, they don't know who they are. So a lot of times they either steal each other clothes or behave, especially girls. It can be like a very interesting environment, and you don't really know a notion of yourself, and everything depends on your looks and getting the job. So there's a lot of drama and catfights that I remember were happening, but I kind of tried to stay away. I was a person who was like on the side doing more art projects and like drawing. I actually sold my paintings at some point. I don't know. I was like wanted to be an artist on the side, and I was always trying to learn from designers how they do it, and sometimes ask them questions or just observe, you know, about their work. And typical day for a model, it starts really early. You have around like 10, 20 castings a day, which means like auditions, where you have to go on the public transport because you have a really tiny allowance. Mm-hmm. You literally can afford basic things like food. And if you're sending money home, you know, it means that you have to save from that. And sometimes I would eat only eggs and grapes, which brought me to become anorexic, you know, but I was saving money, and that's how it started. And then you, and my agent, thank God, saved me from that. But usually you wear really high heels. You have to dress the part. So, you know, it all depends on how you presentable you are. Mm-hmm. And you go to public transport in like high heels. You run around town, you know, get thirsty. It is tough, man. It's so tough. Nobody understands. And then you just join a line of, you know, 100 more girls who look exactly your type, or maybe not your type. And maybe sometimes if you're late because of the transport, they close the casting. So you like, sometimes, you know, there wasn't like, nobody would pay for your gas to say thank you for coming. Yeah. At times they don't even ask how you doing, or like, are you a person? At times I learned over time, just you come, you know, you look the part, whatever they're looking for in the description, you dress the part. And then they look at your pictures. It takes a lot of time to develop portfolio. So that's about like 3 months at the very least, that you also do free photo shoots with photographers that are interested to do testings that paid by agency, which is also you have to pay back later on. So nothing is free, absolutely. You basically accumulate this debt. And after 3 months, I could always see like all these girls are leaving because they just couldn't deal with the pressure. There's a lot of pressure to, you know, fit into the clothes, especially on couture week. It can affect your mental health in just tremendous way, because if you attach your worth to how you look or how many jobs you get, it can get really tricky mentally to think that something is not okay with you and you are not okay, and not, rather than thinking that like, oh, it's just the casting. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, you get a job and maybe you get lucky sometimes. And then the next day you're back to the basics because you're as important as your last job. It is, you know, very rare that girls would be okay with dealing with pressure for more than like a year. Mm-hmm. Some of the teenagers, especially coming to America, some of the teenagers were more, when I moved here, that's like the epicenter of, you know, career where you can really make huge contracts, and people pay models who are based in New York much bigger salaries. So everybody was, goal was to get to New York. And I always could see, you know, girls who didn't come from a tough background, who had a plan B, they probably would last for a couple of months and just say like, you know, forget it, because it's just too tough, you know?
Yeah, it's
and not. Yeah, on the side, you don't really have a lot of friends, because if you book a job, you never know where it's at or where you have to fly, or, you know, you're always around new people. It's kind of hard to form relationships and, you know, real friendships.
Yeah. I can imagine, because also everyone's competitive. You mentioned the anorexia, and a lot of girls get that. And I know that you struggled with that, you just mentioned. And I heard this thing, I don't know, a couple of years ago, where girls will soak cotton balls in milk and eat that as a way to feel full. Where is the pressure coming? I mean, is the pressure to be thin? Or is it like in your case where you didn't have money for food, or is it a combination of both? And how have you overcome?
Yeah, I think, you know, nowadays, and still I feel people struggle with that like perfection image that is now, for example, projected by filters and Instagram. And there's only, you could see, you know, like I by the way, I was doing an FNL like fashion network yesterday, hosting it, and we're talking about Oprah, how skinny she is, and she said that, you know, she used a drug, and they were asking me what I think about it, and I was like, I'm so happy that she feels happy inside, because that's mental health, right? You have to feel happy and healthy about your body. Healthy maybe is, you know, much more important thing, but like at what expense, you know? But I feel there's so much pressure in our culture to fit in the mold, no matter what it is, what like dictates the mold of current trends or seasons of Hollywood now, or, you know, fashion magazines that you open. And I never saw girls eating cotton balls, actually. That's something that I found out on TV later. But I did see a lot of girls throwing food out, and just, the pressure comes from those castings where you show up for Couture Week and there's so much pressure after you go to the casting. You have like a second fitting, and if you don't fit that dress, that's it. And like once you don't fit the dress, you start feeling bad about yourself, and you do anything to get the job, especially in our situation where you don't have a plan B. And that happened to me recently. I realized like there's some stylists who would bring clothes to the fittings that are like a size smaller than you are, knowing your sizes, because usually on your like composite card it says your measurements. But there's certain stylists who would do that. And then like I found it shocking. And thank God my friend now, she runs Model Alliance. So it's an organization that kind of supports models' rights, and it's all just coming out now. Like there's a friend who is doing a documentary about Terry Richardson, and also they did an amazing documentary about designers, and the pressure of making it as a designer as well. So that is something fascinating about the fashion world that I didn't know from my perspective, and how, like, for example, like Alexander McQueen, how hard it is for them. I think it's just a high pressure job, right? Where you have like 4 weeks running, people touching you nonstop, and it's hard not to succumb to like outside world. It's really hard to have self-esteem, and it takes a lot of, a lot of grounding, I would say. Like for me, it took, because the agent said I won't be able to work if I don't deal with my health, which was coming from a mom perspective. I had to go back home and deal with my health and actually realize what's important, and that job is not me, so I kind of took it later on, and it's still like it's a struggle at times, but I don't take it too seriously in Hollywood or fashion, where it is a job, and if people decide not to take you, it has nothing to do with you. It's more the vision or whatever. When you don't get the role, a lot of times I would suggest the role to my friends, because if they fit in better, like it is better at the end anyway.
Yeah, for sure. Okay, so how did you go from Paris and modeling? I know you did some modeling in New York, but how did you go from modeling to LA or to acting?
It's so funny. Like I keep asking actors, and they're like, always knew they want to be actors. And I think on some level I wanted to be an actor, but I just never acknowledged it in a way, but I wanted it more as a creative process. Like what I found out is it's about the voice, right? And it's having that voice rather than just being an object of whatever products you sell, and kind of not having a say in whatever you're selling, just being that object. So what happened is, like, I actually had my kids already. I never thought that I could be an actor. It's much harder work. And for somebody, especially with an accent, Hollywood, when I got here, was completely very much studio run. And like if you have a Russian accent, nobody would even take you. But I also started very late after having my kids. And people don't start out in acting. I got lucky. So I auditioned as a model. Rodrigo Prieto, he was the director, he was the cinematographer of Babel, they won an Oscar. And he had a daughter, a teenage daughter, who struggled with eating disorder. And he wanted to do a movie with Elle Fanning, and a couple models about like body dysmorphia. So I remember auditioning for that from my modeling agency. They obviously needed a couple models. And I remember I just had my kid. I was like, it was a huge shock. And, I was still very hormonal, and I think very emotional in a sense. So they're like, okay, show us the darkest side of modeling. And you have to like cry and, just, I think I vomited all my like emotions at that time. And they're like, yeah, we're gonna cast you. I'm like, oh my God, they cast you for like the darkest things that you don't like dare to share with anybody. I don't know. I feel to be an actor, it's a weird thing, because I think everybody comes for a different perspective. I still try to figure out. I think a lot of people who are actors have a lot of trauma, and it kind of helps them to heal it. Like honestly, I think there's a lot of healing in storytelling, and it is a tough job. It's much tougher than modeling because you have to memorize a lot of lines and you have to put your heart on the table. But at the same time, I found that working on certain archetypes is like really helping me, so to say, to grow and learn as a person. And and I've been just lucky to work, you know, with a couple amazing artists.
Yeah, I mean, I was thinking about it the other day, and it can seem like acting could be the easiest thing in the world, but I think it's not. I think it's very hard because you have to manage to do a character and to pour, you're pouring so much of yourself into that role and the emotions in it. You probably feel like on some days a lot has been taken out of you.
Oh yeah.
Tired and drained, and yeah, I don't think it's easy work.
Yeah, you know, so you have to be a certain masochist to be an actor. We're discussing. I don't know. There's a part, especially in European cinema, I think directors like to talk to actors at some point when you get a better result. I don't know if it's true or not, but it is a dramatic process for sure.
Yeah, and for like anybody who's wanting to go into acting, what is the first thing you tell them?
You know, I would always say, ask yourself why you want to do it.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of times as well. And, you know, you get into it just because you want to feel a hole of being loved, which
mm-hmm.
is missing. I think a lot of actors think that if they get that love from the outside, that they're going to be, that it's true love, right? And that's why I think a lot of people get into drugs, because once they get that love from outside, it doesn't fill a hole.
Mm-hmm.
So I would definitely say why you do it, you know, and if it's not for recognition or your ego, then I would suggest to do it, because literally the ego will drive you so far. You know, of course, there is narcissism at some point, you know, in some acting, but I think every actor is a little bit narcissistic.
You always say that.
Yeah, it's true, you know?
Yeah.
You have to, you know, look at your face or whatever. You're an instrument, you know, in a way.
Mm-hmm.
But I would say just come from service. A lot of times people want a credit, so they want a social climb and they want to be famous. And it, like, never will do anything for you at the end.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's not going to fill a hole. So I think if you are interested in storytelling, interested to be part of the team, I feel like it's very different than modeling, because in modeling, you're the center of attention, but in acting, you're just part of a huge machine. And if you don't know how to be of service, you definitely won't get far. You'll develop a reputation that you're just an asshole.
I see. Right. Yeah. And that's probably with any career in life, like, you really need to know why you want to be a doctor or lawyer or actor or whatever.
Well, yeah, that's true.
Yeah. Or you're just gonna, it's not gonna be natural. You're not gonna be natural in it. But okay, so what's it like living in LA?
City of angels. Only demons are here.
Yeah.
That joke, you know, if they won't fuck you, they'll fuck you. Sorry, I don't know if I can curb, you can blurb it. Yeah, well, it's been kind of a revelation. I feel like LA is such a layered place, which is like unveiling for me more and more in different aspects. I think it's a very polarized place. It has the most light and the most darkness at the same time, and not everybody can handle it. I think it's a city of controversies. Like, the palm trees are not real, right? But then there's amazing nature and it's always sunny, but is it always like not dark? Like, there is a lot of darkness in this city as well. It's definitely a magical place in all kind of senses. I never really planned, so to say, like, for a long time to live here. I just have a kid and you know, moved here already when my son went to school, so I had to settled down somewhere. and kind of discovered LA through like motherhood and sets, and I wasn't really social, so to say. So, only after my kids got a little bit bigger, I realized that the city can be also like it has great things. It has the best artists, it's not as class oriented. This is the only city I would say it's not class oriented. Like anybody who is a dreamer, everybody comes from, with big dreams, and some people who come from nothing really made an amazing career, and show business and creativity in a good sense. They really like manifested it. And sometimes it can just swallow you. There's a dark side of it, of like people taking advantage for credits and just doing it at any cost. And, it's really hard to know and have authentic friends, I find, in this city. Of course, they always say like it depends, but because everybody's so busy, you have to drive somewhere, so you have to have extra effort to see people and create those relationships. And a lot of times everybody's in the business, so it can become really disheartening if you just open up, and it's really hard not to build that layer of like protection. And that's something that I struggle on a daily basis. Like, where do you, okay, you want to collaborate and make things happen with like amazing other artists, and where you have to set boundaries and say like, okay, this person is just taking and taking and taking, and this is probably time to stop, because then you can definitely just finish, on the street.
Yeah, for sure. It's a unique city in that sense. And I feel like what you're saying, it's a contradiction that you have that fake world, but I'm sure that there's also a very genuine part of LA of people who aren't in the movie business and are just teachers or, work in restaurants and they're so genuine. But I applaud people who live there. It's a tough city. So you do comedy. Is that another way of, it's like a healing thing, a hobby, but it's a blessing to your life that it adds to your life that maybe acting or modeling doesn't?
Yeah, I did a film with John Turturro and Woody Allen at some point, and at that time I was starting to get frustrated because I always wanted to do a romantic comedy, but they would always say like, oh, this is another Russian spy, or like at the time it's like a prostitute, So I was starting to get really frustrated with the storytelling and being the representation of those really, limited types. And then I remember finding out that Woody Allen does like jazz and stand up, and I kind of like I had a discussion, I think it was with John Turturro, and he's like, well, you can always, you don't need to. We were talking about doing a play, that I was doing a play, and I was like, there's not enough Russian plays as well. There's Chekhov, but not that many people are casting and doing it. And I think we talked about like, oh, you can do stand up and you can do whatever you want and you can tell your story and you can create characters. But, I think if there is something in you that needs to be released as a creative person, no matter who you are, where you are, how much money you have, you'll always find a platform. So for me, it was just a platform that I found. Nobody ever said I was funny. They maybe said I was weird. Nobody ever is like, oh, you're the funny person who's telling jokes. I was definitely like a quirky, weird person.
But Jacqueline says you're funny, Jacqueline Rosenthal, because I think
Yeah,
that's
well,
funny.
this is the thing. It's like when you do weird things and you're clumsy, I think it's funny. It's not like you're trying to be funny. It's just like you just have that thing. So I have that like funny energy for sure. I didn't even know, how to write jokes, but my mentor Jerry Corley taught me. He teaches the class, and it's kind of like writing music. It's the basics, and then you find your voice inside of that. So it is similar to jazz, I would say. You have to have an ear for timing. You can improvise. It is definitely a skill. I don't know one setup comedian who is like, oh yeah, it's like a natural thing. I think comedians work really, really hard, no matter what they present as like, oh, I'm just like showed up on stage. I think they're the most hardworking people on themselves as well. I see, they would do anything to get a laugh. I don't think I'm in that category. Like I'm fine doing sets just to improvise and try different characters. and see what sticks. And it brings me a lot of joy because I can produce and give voice with like models of comedy to other people who maybe don't have a voice and do it for a good cause. Like, this has been amazing time doing the shows for like anti-human trafficking. We did one show for from the Hutt tribe who collects plastic from beaches, and they're real organizations, and it's just such a joy. You can feel the energy changes in the room, and just to be able to have the supportive community of other women or minorities, so to say, who say like, oh, thank you so much for giving me this platform and giving me a chance to tell my story. It really warms my heart, like it's a much bigger cause than just, my ego. And like I love doing those shows.
Yeah. And do you feel that you're learning something about, or does it help you with your acting when you do comedy?
It's a little bit different. It can help you a lot with timing. So comedic timing is something you learn with a live stage much faster, because people react and you never know who's in the audience. There's no editing. So that helps a lot, but it's definitely a different skill. Like a lot of stand-up comedians, I think, they're kind of in control of the narration, So in acting, you can't be in control. You have to be vulnerable. It's a little bit different skills. Like I know Tiffany Haddish, she studied with my acting coach Margie Haber, and for actor, you really have to like to give up control and be present in the moment. And I think for stand up, because you write it, you still rehearse it, and you can't just like, oh, I'm in the moment, I don't know what I'm doing. Even though it's a little bit different skills, but I think no matter what you do, it like helps you in your creative pursuit, whatever you do creatively.
And Joe Coy was saying that when he hosted the Golden Globes the other night, and he got a lot of negative pushback about his monologue. He was saying it's they're completely two different worlds, acting and or stand up and the monologue for an award show. And yeah, I can imagine it's nerve-wracking because you're not in control of the monologue of an award show the way that you are of your stand up.
Yeah, and also stand up is much easier to do to less people, when it's a huge place, you almost have to project, right? And sometimes it's not as intimate and you can't really see exactly all the faces. And I think it's much harder to do for the biggest stadiums, the stand up.
Yeah, I can imagine. Okay, so are you, so you've got a play coming up and yeah, is that what do you what does 2024 look like for you? Some plays, some movies, maybe?
Yeah. I have a pilot that we're shooting, just got off, a couple indie things, and maybe another studio film. I can't yet confirm it, like I told you. So I don't want to just like bullshit and then, it's not coming together. But I think that's the thing, is like I'm usually coming up, you either start the year with like anxiety, or you start it with like, okay, it's gonna be great. I think it's all about the mindset, because a lot of times life of an artist, like you don't know, and you live in complete unknown. But I'm lucky I have this play for Valentine. I have Models of Comedy in New York. I have another film with Matt Rife that's coming out in the AMC on February 2nd. So they're flying me to New York and Cincinnati. It's called The Private Eye, with a couple of great comedians. Eric Roberts as well is in it. And yeah, I have like a pilot after, and we'll see. I got an agent in Cannes last year, so they asking me to come to Paris, and that's something that I'm thinking about maybe doing as well.
Very nice. So you've got a busy 2024, hopefully. If
Yeah.
a Russian director approached you to do a Russian film, would you?
Of course. Yeah. I mean, I think it doesn't matter. It all depends on the script and the story and like what it's about and the archetype. I'll do any film. I'm not political at all in that sense. I'm definitely, it's terrible what's happening in the world, but I would do, and I would do anything creative, like with other creative people who have something humanitarian, like as a message to say.
Yeah. Last question. What would you tell your 13-year-old self?
I would say life is so short, and Doesn't really matter, you know, you don't have to be shy because nobody really cares about themselves. So don't get so self-involved, you know.
Yeah.
Just enjoy the moment. And I think I would say also like build the connections, the real friendships and relationships, because having a community is very important. No matter where people come and what they do for a living or, you know, different class, like if you like a person for who they are, it's important to invest into relationships.
Yeah, that's hard to do though. It's hard to find genuine people, I think, especially in the entertainment world.
Yeah, it's definitely can be a challenge.
Well, thank you so much for joining the podcast. It's always, I learn a lot from you always, and you always have a positive outlook on life. Like, I feel I internalize or I take in things quite personally and hold on to them. And I feel you're quite the opposite. Like, you let go and you forgive and you stay positive.
Yeah, thank you. I mean, I don't know. You know, people like in the food lines, and there's so many more things that are happening. I'm just like, okay, what am I grateful for today? You know, there's a roof. Like, you don't need much actually in life. And like, creative life can be different. And I think we all have that creativity inside of us that is an amazing gift.
Yeah, for sure. Well, thank you.
Thanks. Congrats on the podcast, too.
Thank you. Thank you. I hope that you enjoyed this podcast episode and that you have found a soulful connection to the conversation. God bless you, and until the next episode, go bless somebody else.